seafoam goddess. Aphrodite is not born motherless. They all tell tales of her creation. They speak of how Zeus's blood spilled into the sea and turned into seafoam. And from that seafoam she arose, a fully formed goddess. Somehow, they always miss her mother in that tale, even though she's so intrinsic to it, so important. Somehow, they always forget the sea. Amphitrite gathers Zeus's blood in her hands, pulls it close to her chest, and thinks, unbidden, that she could do something interesting with this. She uses her claw-like nails to cut open the skin of her stomach until she's surrounded by a bright red cloud of warm blood. "I will not carry you," she mutters, mixing her blood with Zeus's and pressing it into the shape of a woman. "But you are still of my belly, of my flesh." She was a primordial goddess once. She was Oceana and Oceanus, was man and then woman, and knows how to create a body, how to create such a simple thing after all these years. But even so, she's still impressed when the woman turns to her. Dark copper skin and heavy, long black hair. "You're beautiful," she tells her daughter, because she is. Full lips and brown eyes. "You are of me, and I am the sea. You are seafoam, and your name is Aphrodite." "Aphrodite," she repeats, no childlike wonder or curiosity in gaze, just the heavy knowledge of an adult, of a woman. She has ancient blood in her, and it leaves no room for childhood. "My name is Aphrodite, and I am beautiful." "Don't tell anyone that you are mine," Amphitrite warns, but doesn't give any further explanation. The sea doesn't explain itself, and neither does she. Her daughter doesn't question her. Amphitrite wonders if it's because she already knows. Or maybe she just doesn't care. She doesn't ask before leaving. The sea doesn't care for others' explanations either. "Where were you today?" Poseidon asks crankily when she swims back into the palace. She ignores him, moving past and away from him. His scowl at her back is less worthy of her notice than a fly buzzing in her ear. Poseidon may command the sea while he holds her heart, but he is not of it, is not like it, and he never truly will be. Her father welcomes her with open arms when she arrives, proud of her beauty, of her strength, of the power that rolls off of her in waves. "She cannot just be a goddess," Hera remarks, looking at her with narrowed, judgmental eyes. "She must be the goddess of something. What shall it be?" It's not jealousy in Hera's gaze. Not exactly. It's not that abstract. But she still can't place it. So she demurs. "I wish to be like you, Queen Hera." She raises an eyebrow, and Aphrodite wonders at her misstep, but doesn't have time to contemplate it before Hestia says, "A lofty goal for a young goddess. If you wish to be an object of worship in Hera's honor, then you must be the goddess of beauty, for she is the most beautiful." Hera barely keeps from rolling her eyes, and Zeus says, "Oh, if you are to be a mirror goddess of my wife, then you must be the goddess of love, of course." It is said with complete sincerity, But Hera is smiling in a way that makes Zeus take half a step away from her. Of course, husband dear, you are too kind. I can be both, she pipes up, desperate to end this strange, confusing tension. Maybe coming to the Pantheon was a mistake. Maybe she should have just stayed at the bottom of the sea and befriended a giant squid and many small starfish and never had to worry or wonder about these complicated politics that she doesn't yet understand. Hera turns to her, and again those piercing amber eyes bore into her soul. She must find what she's looking for, because she takes a deep breath, then intones.
So mote it be.
In the type of voice only a queen goddess could have, carrying Aphrodite's name and domain across the sea and through the air, whispering it in the corners of homes, placing her in the stars with a single breath. Zeus seems oddly put out, as if he wanted to be the one to do that, but says nothing. The ground rumbles beneath her feet, and Aphrodite stumbles, nearly falling. When she looks up again, there's another throne on the Pantheon, one of the purest white marble and delicately rounded corners. Hera takes a step back and gestures to the empty throne. For you, Aphrodite, goddess of love and beauty. When Hephaestus hears what happened, he destroys an entire section of his workshop. His chest is heaving as he tosses another table of delicate silver instruments against his volcano wall, watching them bend and shatter with a dark, vicious sort of satisfaction. He reaches for another, knowing he'll regret this later even as he does it, but not being able to bring himself to care. Firm hands curl around his wrists, and Hephaestus turns with a snarl, ready to push whoever dared interrupt him into the nearest vat of molten lava. So, of course, it's the one person that would have no effect on. Stop, his little brother says, eyes hollows in his face, the skin beneath them bruised purple. What are you doing? Just no. Let go of me, Hephaestus snaps, trying to tug his arms free. But Ares doesn't let him go. There was a time when he was physically stronger than Ares, when he could shove him and order him around. But that was a long time ago, and he can only pull uselessly on his arms, trying and failing to reclaim them. Ares shakes his head. Just stop. I know you heard. I'm sure Mom had her reasons. I don't care about your mother, he shouts, but his voice catches at the end. He hopes Ares doesn't notice, but he's never that lucky. Of course I heard. Everyone heard. His brother steps forward, hand outstretched, but he steps away, his back hitting the rough cave wall. Ares stops, standing there, his face wretched and twisted in pain. Please don't do this to yourself. This wasn't about you. Of course it wasn't, he says, closing his eyes against the tidal wave of bitterness clawing its way up his throat. Nothing is ever about me. A calloused hand cups his face, hesitant and delicate. And Hephaestus knows that if he pulls away, Ares will let him. That Ares is so careful not to push him too hard or too far. He came here from the battlefield. He's ignoring the invocations of his name to be here right now. Ignoring the screams in his head so he could go running to him. His brother loves him. It's the only balm against this. Against the jagged edges of wounds that are only there in his head. He takes a deep breath and leans into Ares' hand, letting him take some of this weight.
She's Zeus's child. She hates Zeus's children. Why would she?
It's not the same, Ares says quietly. She hates evidence of Zeus's transgressions. That's not what Aphrodite is.
I don't care,
he snarls, and it takes everything inside him not to push past Ares and continue destroying everything around him.
She's a goddess now. She has a throne on Olympus now, and all she had to do was walk in. She's a goddess of the Pantheon on Hera's word. Who else can say that?
No one. Hera's never used her power as a queen like this before. Ares winces, and Hephaestus finally notices that he's shaking.
You have to go.
No, he says. No, I can stay. It's not too bad.
Go,
he says.
I won't. I'm fine. Everything's fine.
At Ares' unimpressed look, he amends.
It's fine enough. Thank you for coming, but don't hurt yourself to stay.
I want to stay, Ares says earnestly, then leans forward to press his forehead against Hephaestus's. Take care of yourself.
I'm older than you,
he says, lips pulled into a helpless smile. Clean your room, Ares orders before disappearing, slipping back to whatever battle he's in the middle of dealing with. Hephaestus takes a look around his destroyed workroom, his instruments and creations shattered and glittering in broken pieces across the ground, and sighs. It doesn't matter. So what if this new goddess was just given something he had to work and bleed and earn? So what if Hera cares more for some domainless goddess off the street than she cares for him, a child of her blood and womb? It doesn't matter. This goddess, this Aphrodite, doesn't matter and is of no concern of his.